I won't say the wheels have come off, but it's been a challenging couple of weeks, John.
My wheels are off. I'm thinking of the Fred Flintstone car, and yeah. My wheels off, and it's just kind of, I'm dragging on the wood, and pretty soon the wood's going to be scraped down and there's going to be nothing left.
Warning, Small Business Naked contains illicit business content. Real stories from real small business owners. You're listening to Small Business Naked with Nick and Johnny. It's time to get naked.
Hey, thanks for joining us today on Small Business Naked. I'm Nick.
And I'm Johnny Battle.
Johnny Battle's back.
Back.
He's back. Well, we're back, actually. I mean, we've been like MIA, John.
I know.
I don't know when the last time we actually put an episode up. So sorry, folks, if you're like, wait, what the hell happened to Nick and Johnny?
Well, but we put an episode up every week. Or am I missing that?
We try. Or should I say I try? And it's been dismal in the last couple of weeks. I think we got... The last episode we put up was, John, your friend Donnie?
Oh, yeah. I thought that was last week.
It was, but it was like just... Feels like forever ago. Okay, I think that one went out on Monday of last week, and now it's
on track.
Well, we're not too far off. I used to try and do it every Wednesday or Thursday. I can't remember, and now it's been hit or miss. But we're in our busy season, John.
Yeah, I know. I know. But if no one's listened to that episode of Donnie, I've listened to it twice. It's pretty damn good.
That guy is freaking brilliant.
Yeah, he's really, really good. He's you know, every once in a while you just run across someone that's amazing. They got these skills that you don't have, and he's in one of them. I'm like he's pretty damn good.
If there were superpowers, his superpower would be SEO.
Yeah, is what it would be.
yeah. I feel like if I could have any business skill. Like instantly, like order something up, that would be it because I don't get it. And he just gets it. Like that's how he's built. Like he's been very successful because of it.
Yeah. He's very analytical, and it almost seems to me like it's second nature for someone like him where I have to work at it a little bit and study it. And then I just like, okay, let's do that. So, I can appreciate the skill set.
Yeah. I keep trying stuff and in the web world, and I feel like I fail more than I succeed.
Well, you're not alone.
It's not tangible like some other things. I'm much better relationally and face-to-face with folks.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's where you got to stick with your efforts there.
Maybe he's not very relational, but he seemed pretty relational on.
Yeah, he's got that too. I mean,
God, I hate that. I hate people like that. Freaking cow.
Maybe he just sucks somewhere else.
Maybe his family life sucks. I don't know. Maybe his kids hate him.
No, I think he's pretty good there.
Damn.
Yeah.
All right. Well, some people just got the whole package, I guess.
Well, I guess we're going to talk today about our trials and tribulations. And I would imagine most listeners would be able to relate to some of these problems that you and I are having. And
you're having problems?
We could all cry together. I actually have a mop here to wipe up the tears when we're done.
I think we both need them.
No, hopefully this can be educational of also what not to do and what we've learned from some current mistakes, and just kind of put it all on the line and be a little transparent here.
So most shows, Johnny and I talk to successful business owners from around the world, and we talk about how they've built really fantastic businesses. And so today's really the opposite of that. Johnny and I do what's called What's Up, and so we always check in every other episode on what's going on in our businesses. And so we're going to share the shit and the crap that's going on in our world because it's – I won't say the wheels have come off, but – it's been a challenging couple of weeks, John.
My wheels are off. I'm thinking of the Fred Flintstone car, and my wheels off, and it's just kind of, I'm dragging on the wood, and pretty soon the wood's going to be scraped down, and there's going to be nothing left.
All right. Well, since you opened the door,
I don't want to start. I'm shy right now. I think we should start with you.
We should start with me.
Yes, I want to hear about.
Well, actually, I've had a really good day today, John. We collected. I added up about $12,000 worth of income today, and six of that has been money I've been waiting on for a month. You don't have this problem, but we have had this year in the last 12 to 18 months. We've been talking about as a staff. We've had the biggest problem with accounts receivable, and I've never had those problems before. Some of them have been customers that have just been jackasses, and like I've got one guy who owes me $18,000 and just doesn't want to pay us. And then we've had some contractors. Now, typically, we've not worked with contractors because of all the problems that come along with that, but we've gotten to do some work with some contractors, and just with the delays and how they do their payouts. They're on a draw system with their customers a lot of times. And so then we just get strung out. And so we've been, I think I've had as much as about $80,000, John, in accounts receivable.
Wow, that's a lot of dough.
Yeah. And right now I think it's down to, gosh, this is going to be a guess because I haven't seen the latest report, but I'm going to guess we're probably sitting at around 40 to 50,000.
So obviously accounts receivable is the problem. What do you do to solve it? I mean, you recognize that it's an issue now. So what, from here on, what do you do differently?
Well, we made some changes. It got pretty dire a couple months ago, and I had a cash flow account from the bank that I actually had to get it increased because of the amount of money that was owed to me. And so that helped kind of just get through that time. And now that money is getting paid back. And so that's getting, it's getting better as the money is starting to come in. But what I've kind of really decided from so a couple of things. First, on the residential side, we've decided that if we have larger projects, we're just going to be very open and honest with our customers that says, okay, we take our normal 30% deposit, and then every 2 weeks we're going to take a payment from you. So we're not going to wait until, you know, week four or week five and say, hey, we need to get a payment. We're just going to say, hey, every 2 weeks we're going to get a progress payment based on the work that we've done so that we don't have large amounts of money sitting out there. So we actually have, I signed a $45,000 project that's going to be going on in June and July with one of our customers, and we've already set that structure up with them, and they're completely fine with it. So that's one thing that we've done. The other thing is I really just need to walk away from these contractors. You know, they're just slow pay. And the problem is not only the slow pay, but sometimes they have lots of change orders, and then if we don't get all of our T's crossed and I's dotted, they say, oh, I didn't okay that purchase. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I could see that. I like the idea as pay as you go. Everyone's kind of invested and on track, and so you have some leverage with the customer, at least the way I see it, is because if they don't pay, you can at least stop. Mm-hmm. And if things do go bad,
it minimizes our exposure.
Yeah, your exposure is minimized, so that way if you lose, you don't lose too much. And they're motivated to pay you because they're right in the middle of it, I'm sure. And it's like, let's get this going, let's finish it, you know. So that, I like that. That's a good one.
And the other piece of it is we've been doing, and we're going to be doing, some work for one of the school districts here, and it is just like pulling teeth to get paid. We always get paid, and they never question the bills or any of that kind of stuff. It's just really hard to get paid from them just because it's a bureaucracy, and it's like, you know, you talk to one person and they send it off to somebody else, and then they create a PO, and then that goes on to the gal that actually sends the check. And then the problem, I got two checks today. We had changed in their system what our new address is because I moved last April, but somehow it didn't get changed in their system. So we weren't getting checks. And finally, my renter at our house, I don't think they get the mail all the time. They're like, oh, we have money. We have checks for you from Douglas County. And I'm like, oh,
well thank you.
I've been waiting
for
that.
Thanks for sharing.
I've only been waiting for that for a month. So all of those kinds of things have been very frustrating. But having a day like today, was really nice to have a lot of money, more money than I thought was than I thought was actually came in. So it was very good.
So besides cash flow now and getting paid from your consumer, what other things are you going through?
So there's more. Our other big problem that we've had over the last several months is retention of our employees, John. And I think
you're the only one with that problem, actually.
And if you're listening to this and you're like, I'm fucking tired of hearing them talk about employees, too damn bad, because we've got employees and we've got employee issues. And if you don't have a business that has employees, then maybe this isn't the podcast for you, because that's about 70% of my problems typically. So we've had a retention problem, and I think we've done what we can to mitigate it and really provide something moving forward that's really going to help us retain. I have more issues on that I'll get to, but basically I laid out a couple weeks ago, John, a profit sharing program with my employees. And so they have to be a manager. So that means they're going to be with us at least 4 to 6 months. And then we're going to share profits on a quarterly basis. So 10% of our profits are going to be shared with our team. And
wow, that's a lot.
And yeah, it is, but there's, you and I had a meeting with some other, we did a meetup a couple months ago, where our good buddy Wes came in and spoke. And now Wes is a consultant to dental practices across the country. And he goes in and he implements a very similar program with his dental offices. There's a range typically what they will give as a profit share, but the majority of the customer or the clients that he works with, they see doubling of their revenue and doubling of their profits when they implement this system. So I really felt like I had nothing to lose. Really, we've had a problem with profitability and we've had a problem with retention. So I'm hoping that this really turns both of those things around.
Then how was it taken? Were people excited? Did they buy in? Did they not care? What was the outcome?
You know, we have these monthly meetings where we sit down and talk to the guys, and typically what we're going over is, you know, different policies and procedures, things that have been going wrong. And we did a little bit of that, but then basically what I did was I laid out first thing I did was I talked about personal budgets. And I didn't, you know, ask them to bring their personal budgets, but I just went through the whole process of, okay, you guys have money that comes into your household, and then you have expenses like rent and car payments and all those kinds of things. So, you know, getting them to agree and nod and make sure they're on the same page. And so I said, you know, a business is just like that. We have income and outgo or outflow in the business. And then I basically brought in our income statement or expense. Let's see, which one did I bring in? I don't remember. I always get those ones mixed up.
Probably your P&L, I would imagine, huh?
It was the one that lists all the expenses and what the profit is.
P&L.
So we went through, I didn't go in complete detail, but I went over the big subject headings and went over what direct costs are and how that affects a job and what goes into a job. And then I talked about, okay, these are overhead things. Now, whether we go out and do any projects or not, these are expenses that we have as a business. You know, I've got fuel and cell phones and insurance and salaries and all these things, and that plays into it. And so I laid out exactly where the business was, and I even laid out what I've been getting paid so they had an understanding. And so one of the items I did share with them was that, you know, we have $600 a month in credit card charges. You know, that's what it costs us to run credit cards. And I think that was a big light bulb for a lot of guys, is they just didn't understand how many different costs that we have as a business. But it helped them to understand, you know, if they're more efficient with paint, then that's less money that we have to spend. If they're more efficient with the materials. So that's on the expense side. But then on the income side, they can have an impact on that as well, because if they talk to a neighbor or talk the homeowner into doing more work, that's all additional money that comes into the business. And so there was a lot of light bulbs that went on, and they were very appreciative, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you shared all that, Nick. And oh my, I didn't realize that's, you know, how much things cost. And I think it was really good. And so it really puts kind of this open door, we're not hiding anything kind of deal out there. And it's a scary thing to open the books up and just be transparent like that. And but I really felt like I've been thinking about this, to be honest, for a couple years. And after having that conversation with Wes, I just really felt like that's the missing piece for us. Like I need to get buy-in. I need to have them understand what it really takes. And so every month when we meet, we'll go over the numbers of where we're at. And then every quarter, so it's based on a quarter, they'll get a percentage of the profits. And then only managers will be getting it. And then depending on what level of manager you are, will determine kind of your share of it. So there'll be a pool. Let's say there's $3,000 that gets paid out. You know, somebody might get one share, or somebody else might get three shares. So that's what we're doing on that.
Well, it sounds like they were excited about it, which I would imagine they would be.
Mm-hmm.
And get the buy-in.
Yeah. So now we just need more bodies. I mean, that's the other big piece for us. You know, we've been at this kind of break-even point in the business. With how many crews we've got, and we've got to get to a certain number. And so I laid that out with all the guys. And now we're hopefully adding two or three additional guys this month. And so that should really push us into some good profitability. So super excited about that. But then this week, I got another piece of bad news. My production manager, who's been with me for 3 years, gave me notice and is leaving at the end of the month.
So the profit sharing wasn't enough to keep him around?
No, he's got a different deal, and it'll be interesting to see what shakes out with that. But when I brought him on, he had been working with his uncle. His uncle's an older guy, has a small painting company here in Denver, and wasn't paying him very much. And his uncle is getting close to retirement, and his uncle wants him to take over the business. And basically, he's going to give Ryan the business. Now, the interesting thing is his uncle is going to continue to work as a painter for a couple years. So I'm interested to see how that plays out, because they didn't necessarily get along really all that great.
That just seems odd. As you say that the whole thing seems odd to me.
Yeah, it seems a little bit odd, but, you know, I can see where Ryan would want to make more money and you know, own a business versus working for somebody. That's why we have the show. I mean, obviously, I love encouraging folks to own their own business. But so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that goes. And I think it'll be a different story when it's just Ryan, but them working together is the piece that I go, how's that going to work?
I'm thinking about the uncle in your story, because if you told me I need to sell my business, but I'll go work for a couple of years in the field, I'd be like, you're freaking insane.
Yeah. I mean, he's a painter. I mean, he just has like a couple guys that work for him. So he doesn't have like a big company or anything. It's the typical paint contractor, you know, one guy, a couple helpers, that kind of thing. So,
kind of owner operator guy. Yeah. Who's out in the field every day anyways.
Right. Right. Exactly. And he's not necessarily a people person, and doesn't like the business side of it at all. So, so it's going to be interesting, but you know, what that means for me is I basically just inherited another job. So now I got to go back out in the field. I'm going to hire somebody. I'm not going to hire a replacement, but I am going to hire somebody that does some of Ryan's, responsibilities. And then I'm going to take over a lot of the management piece again.
Well, it sounds like you got a lot going on.
I'm going to have a busy freaking summer. I know that.
Yes, you are.
And the hardest part is my wife and I, we have a 20-year anniversary this year, and we are going to Italy at the end of June for 2 weeks. So the timing couldn't have been worse, really, for this to happen. Like, really, couldn't we have waited like another month and a half? Like, just get me past the vacation, come back, and then I have to work really hard. But so I don't know. We'll figure it out, though. We always do.
Well, besides those problems, which I imagine are enough, is there any other thing you need to throw out on the table tonight?
No, I think that's it, John. Those are all of the problems that I did.
That doesn't seem too bad, actually. I think they're all solvable.
You're like, the grass is greener over there, Nick. That sounds like pleasant land.
No, it sounds like they're all fixable problems.
Yeah, they'll be fine. We'll get through it. It's Yeah, things are, I'm actually pretty excited about where we're at now. It's just been a tough last 4 weeks, I guess. So what's going on with you, John? What's up?
Well, I have my problems also, like everybody else. I'm, you know, we talk a lot on the show about labor and labor issues. And I think someone listening could fairly say, well, maybe you're talking about labor problems because you don't understand labor. And that's a fair statement. But in our business, we use low skilled laborers, and they are laborers. And in our particular local economy, they're very hard to find right now. Things are just booming. The housing market's going crazy. You know, in this current market, if a house goes up, and this is no exaggeration, I think it's on the market for 2 to 4 days and usually sells for more than the asking price.
Yeah, just as a kind of to look at the landscape and understand it, I bought this house back in April, so last year, about a year ago, and we have seen a $40,000 increase in value in 1 year.
That's pretty amazing.
That's how fast. And I think by the end of the summer, I bet you we gain another 20 or 30,000. That's how bad the market. Well, that's how good the market is, I guess.
Depends how you look
however
at
you want to look at it. Yeah.
But you know, things are booming, which is great. But it makes it really hard for us to find people. And you know, quite honestly, even when I was running one and two trucks, labor was always a problem. It got better as
just
we got
just a smaller problem.
You know, actually got better as we got larger to some degree because we had had more people to rely on. But when we get hit with things like this, it's challenging. But it is what it is, and it's made me rethink a lot of things, and it's made me kind of get revived for different aspects of my business. I want to do different things with it, and it's forcing me to do that in a very, very good way. So I'm excited to take on some new service arms and do some different things than what I have been doing. And so I look at this current challenge as not just a challenge every day, but as a gift and opportunity that I'm presented with, and how am I going to handle it and work with it and do it there. So I'm partly frustrated by the problem and partly excited that I have the problem to deal with, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the... Are there other factors this year versus other years, other than the real estate market, or?
Everybody asks that question, and the truth is, from my standpoint, is I don't know what the answer is. I could speculate like everybody else, and that's all I would be doing was speculating. But my speculation says that the housing market's booming. They're stealing people away from us because those jobs are more year-round. They pay a little more, that type of thing. And year-round is important. Also, the immigration program, for those of you in the U.S., we have a program called H-2B, which allows us to bring immigrants in from South America and Mexico mostly. I think it's capped at somewhere around 62,000, and they have four rounds of immigration. And by the third round, they met their cap of 62,000. So people that were in the fourth round didn't get their folks. So that means more of those people are going into that general labor pool to grab more people. And I think that labor pool is small and has been small anyways, because just of the U.S. economy and how it's changing and how kids want to do different things with their lives instead of manual labor. And so it's a smaller shrinking market anyways, or, you know, employee base or potential employee base. And now the housing market's stealing from it, and the immigration program, or people that didn't make the program, are stealing from it. And so it made it even smaller. And I think that's causing the problem now. That's my take on it. And whether that's reality or not, I don't know. I just do know that there is a problem.
Well, John, I always thought that, you know, it was really nice that all these companies could have cheap Mexican labor.
Yeah, that's funny. It's back in the day.
I'm saying that with a little tongue in cheek, only because we've had this conversation.
You and I tease about that. Everyone says you're using that cheap Mexican labor, and boy, Mexican, and it's now called Hispanic labor because the South Americans don't like to be called Mexicans, I've discovered. But the Hispanic labor market is not cheap, and it's a premium. People, meaning companies, want that Hispanic labor. They know they're hard workers, and they're in demand, and they're more. Actually, if you're Hispanic, you're at a more premium than a U.S. resident.
So those guys are making more money.
Oh, most definitely, yes.
And why is that?
It's because they tend to, and I'm generalizing now, but they tend to have a stronger work ethic. They work harder, they work longer, they don't cry, they don't complain. And again, I'm generalizing, some of them cry and complain. But they do all the hard work, they get it done if they're sick. It's not uncommon to see them, you know, throw up on the side of the truck and get back to work instead of going home and saying, I'm done for the day. And employers want people like that. They want people to get the work done. And these guys, a lot of times, you know, you'll get the work done.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's people that don't work in construction or kind of the blue collar. They have a viewpoint that the Hispanic labor means, oh, I'm just getting cheap labor and you're making a ton of money.
Yeah, they think that. You know, another thing the Hispanic laborers have going for them is generally a lot of them are bilingual, so they can speak English and Spanish. And that works really well for, let me give you an example, like a roofing contractor where he's got to run 5 to 7 guys on a project. And so this project manager can speak Spanish to the laborers and then speak English to the customer. So that makes him very valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And then he doesn't have to do a lot of manual labor because he's kind of managing the job.
Mm-hmm.
And so he can make pretty good money and not do a lot of physical work. So that, you know, that guy's really a premium.
Mm.
Or gal, for that matter.
Or gal, yeah. Well, I, you know, I was trying to do, we're trying to hire. And I think I had 3 or 4 interviews set up over the last 2 days. How many people do you think showed up, John?
I would guess if you did 4, you had 1 or 2 show up.
I had 1 show up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One actually texted me and said she had laryngitis, which I don't know. One said, called back and said, oh, do you pay weekly or less frequently? And I said, every other week. Oh, I need weekly. I didn't understand why that makes a difference.
Well, that's a big deal. Yes. They can't budget their money. They need it now.
Yeah.
I hear that one a lot.
I had one guy that was super excited, you know, to get an interview and then just didn't show up. And then I had one show up and that person wasn't very exciting to me.
You know, to your point, Nick, and I know you believe this because we talk about it and you've experienced it, but like yesterday, I think we hired 2 or 3 new guys. I seen 2 of the guys in the office. It took a long time filling out the application. Like, I don't know if they were struggling with it or just making sure they were getting it right. But whatever, it seemed to take longer than normal. And they didn't show up today, which was their first day of work. That just blows my mind. We had 2 other new guys that started yesterday, and they mowed a lawn. You know, we're in the lawn business. They mowed a lawn, got there at 8 o'clock, mowed 1 lawn, got back to the shop at 11:30. So it took them.
That was a big lawn.
Yeah. It took them multiple hours, I'll say, to mow this lawn.
I say that because I know how big John will allow his customers to have. He only cuts houses with lawns that are like a postage stamp size, right?
Yeah, so they were obviously doing something else. And they just came back to the shop and said, you know, this isn't for us after 1 lawn. So we've had guys last, you know, an hour. So, you know, I'm not surprised by it all. But Yeah, it's not to cry, but it's, I tell you, it's honestly tough to be in a business, a seasonal business, that runs low-skilled laborers. I can't think of a more difficult business scenario to be in. And if you listen to that show that Donnie, we had Donnie Shelton on the show from Triangle Pest. If you guys get a chance, you need to listen to that show. He's really good. And, you know, one thing he said in there is that one of the metrics when you're running a business, a very important one, is your turnover rate. Because if you can, once you get people hired and you get people trained, as a business owner or a manager, your life is just so much easier and so much less drama when this occurs. And so it's such an important metric to understand. And I think that I could really, when he said that, I could really appreciate it, because I'm on the other side where we flip a lot of people often. And there's a big debate of how you keep them longer and all this and that. And we can reduce our turnover, which we have, and all those things. But the reality is it's just, you're going to have a lot of turnover in what we do. It is what it is.
Yeah, that was episode number 39. If you guys want to go back and listen to Donnie, Donnie had so much stuff for us to learn from. I mean, just amazing.
He's a good one. I myself, like I said, I think I've actually listened twice or three times, and I was there in the interview. It was so good, I had to listen to it a few more times. So you got to get that one under your belt. That one's good.
Well, the hard part for us is when you're doing the interview, I feel like we're so focused on, you know, what's the next question and all that stuff. So it's really helpful to re-listen back to the episodes. And but his was chock full of fantastic stuff. You know, I want to ask you something, John, from a couple of weeks ago, and you may not want to talk about this because it might have been a dark day for you, but you went out into the field and did some labor.
I did.
What did you learn from that day?
Yeah, I went out because we were behind, and I don't think I've been in the field for 7 years. And grabbed a mower and mowed. And I kind of wanted to, not only I needed to help out, but I wanted to see what goes on in their mind mentally and see if I could get into the mode of a technician and see if there's anything I could do to make the process better. I don't know that I came up with anything to make the technician more happier or better, but because it's just tough, boring work sometimes. But one kind of revelation I had is we offer this service called weed kill in the rock beds, which generally we spray Roundup in the mulch in rock beds to kill the weeds that are in there. And I'm in a nice neighborhood and I'm looking at these beds, and most of them are loaded with this stuff. They got ground cover, they got flowers, they got trees. And we're always, when I say we're, our guys are always accidentally spraying the wrong things and killing the grass by the beds and killing a plant in the bed. And it just goes on and on and on. And I was looking at these beds thinking to myself, well, no wonder these guys can't get it right. This is a mess. I couldn't even get it right all the time, I think. And so I went back to the office that day. I think I called them after a few lawns and said, we need to stop doing that service because, you know, we can't get it right consistently, especially as we scale, and we're going to make other people upset, and we're going to lose some of our other core services. So I just demanded that we stop doing it instantly. And so we stopped taking, you know, these type of accounts. Later on, I did some research, talked to people at Scotts, which, you know, Scotts is a $250 million service company. And I asked them if they do it, and they says, oh, no, we don't do that. And I said, why? Oh, we killed too many bushes. So they can't figure it out. So if they can't figure it out and they're this big conglomerate, I'm not sure I'm going to find the solution. So I threw in the towel and said, you know what? We're not doing that anymore. Let's delete that one off our list.
So you're no longer going to be killing weeds?
In the rock and mulch beds.
Oh, okay.
we kept all our customers this year that currently have it, but we're not going to continue that as a service down the road because it's prone for failure. And if you have one or two guys doing it, great. But as you scale, you can't get it right all the time. It's too impossible.
Now you have stuff that you can spray on the lawn that kills weeds but doesn't kill the grass, right?
Correct.
But that stuff doesn't work in the beds?
It only kills the weeds in the beds or anything with foliage. So, again, you could do damage with the spray there.
Okay, so things that people would want would still get killed.
Yeah, that's exactly what would happen.
Hmm.
But there's an option we have for us, which is really cool. There's a product you can spray in the spring. It's a nice pre-emergent. You just spray it all in the beds everywhere. And if it will keep anything from 80%, it will keep 80% of the stuff from coming up that would generally come up during the season. And this is just a one-time spray. You can spray everything in the beds, and it will kind of solve that problem. So next year we're going to offer that service, and people will still have 20% of those weeds still come up, but they'll be a lot less than if they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to offer that as a new service next year.
Okay. Any other problems that you're having right now, John?
You know, I think no problems, but with the problems I have, I've been doing a lot of introspection and studying happiness a little bit. And I like to watch a lot of stuff from Tony Hsieh from Zappos because he's a big advocate on being happy. And, you know, I think as business owners, you get into business for whatever reason. We all have different reasons. I think for most people, a lot of it is to make money. And the reason why you make money is to do or purchase things or have some type of security or false sense of security for that matter, that you're doing okay and you can't be taken down. And, you know, you do it because you can be happy. And so I think you get, not all people, but you get to a point in your life where you say, you know what, why am I doing what I'm doing? And is it making me happy? And it's nice to do that introspection and challenge your actions. I've been thinking about that a lot. I think being happy is much more important than many of the things that used to be a priority for
me. Mm. Yeah, I think that's good advice for folks to look at. Because if you're just going after the dollar, it gets pretty shallow pretty quick.
Yes, gets old quick. And another thing I'm learning is that, you know, when you have a passion about your business, and we're generally all workaholics because it seems to go hand in hand with entrepreneurship, but, you know, it's healthy to take some days off and have these free days to just escape. I think it keeps you alive. If you do not do that, you get burned out and you get tired of what you're doing. So you need to schedule some time off even when you don't think you can afford it, because it just kind of recharges your batteries, gets you excited and keeps you engaged. You know, if you think of doing something you love, you know, you like to play soccer. I like to mountain bike. Well, if each of us did that every day, we'd get sick of it. And so you need to protect your business interests and your passion by giving it some space sometimes. And I'm learning that also.
Well, I was actually pretty surprised that you took some time off with all the crap that's going on with your business right now. And you took some time off and went out west, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to a mountain bike race, but it was planned months ago, but I still left. And you know, what's funny is I'm doing the race and I'm out there and I'm trying to think about business. I really am. And I couldn't do it. I wanted to be on the trail and just kind of ponder some thoughts of some things that were going on and maybe sort some things out in my mind, which I can easily do at home. Like the business feelings will just flood me. But I got out of that, my environment, my typical environment, and just put myself somewhere else. And I was just so kind of intoxicated with where I was that the thoughts just didn't enter my mind. And It was very invigorating.
Well, this wasn't an easy little race. It wasn't like, oh, let's go race for like half an hour. This was like a serious race. How long mile wise and how long
like
did it take?
61 miles and a little under 61, like 60.6. And I think I was on my bike like 8 hours and 40 minutes, something like that. A nasty, challenging trail. Like it was, I thought it was tough. There, I was with some guys there that were probably pro racers, and they were fast. Like I think they finished it in just under 6 hours, but not me.
And this is like this is like single track type stuff, right?
Yeah, single track, and I mean hike.
Those who don't know what single track is,
it's just a narrow trailer in the mountains. You know, that's generally technical with rocks and stumps and roots to go over. I mean, there was this one part of the trail, like I was trying to, it was muddy. I was trying to push my bike up and I kept sliding down. It was so steep. I could hardly get my body and my bike up just walking. There was a river crossing, you know, I had to cross a river that was about 2 feet deep. I mean, it was an adventure, but
man, this is like the real deal.
I don't know. I was halfway through it. And my girlfriend was at the aid station, and I knew she wouldn't let me quit. But before I got there and saw her, in my mind, I was done. I was like, I'm quitting. Like I know what's on the way back, and it's a huge climb. So I'm done. I don't care. And then I saw them, and they gave me some food and patted me on the butt and tapped me on the head. And I couldn't bring up my feelings or say no. I jumped on my bike and just did it.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you survived.
Me too.
Yeah, that's a little more challenging than anything that I go out and do.
Well, it was fun. I tell you, when you do finish something like that, you do feel good about yourself, just finishing. But I'm glad I didn't quit.
Well, it was probably a good thing to just get away from all the crap that you've been dealing with and just focus on something else.
Yes. So that's about all I have, and I hope everyone else got to cry with us, because this is pretty much what it was. But I would imagine everyone else at least one time in their career can relate to your problems to some degree, my problems to some degree, because we all go through these cycles. We all have great business years where we think nothing can touch me, I'm unstoppable, I'm the man. And then we have other years that are a little more problemsome and humbling at the same time there. And so it's just part of life and part of running the business.
Yeah. Well, this has hopefully it's not been a super downer episode for everybody to listen to, but this is the real stuff that we go through. I mean, Johnny, I don't like to sugarcoat much. So
today I checked in with Ryan Shank, number 3 from M Help Desk. M Help Desk. Who is M Help Desk a perfect solution for?
M Help Desk is a perfect solution for anyone that has a business where they have to go out into the field or into the customer's home. So anyone that is not staying in the office. So you can think of a plumbing company, an HVAC company, a cabling company, security installers, painters, anyone who dispatches field techs.
How about a pizza company?
It's not good for a pizza company. A pizza company, it's more, you know, when you have to dispatch someone, go into the field, either do a quote or actually do service in the field. You know, it gives the business owner or the dispatcher visibility. Kind of, you can see what everyone's doing, and you're able to just do things faster. You don't have to do things on pen and paper and kind of submit these paper quotes to these prospective customers. You can deliver a wow factor to the customer.
M Help Desk. Get organized, get more business, get shit done. Check him out at mhelpdesk.com.
So please check out our website, smallbusinessnaked.com. You'll see all of the past episodes. You know, we don't talk about past episodes a ton, but we've really, if you've never listened to this show before, you know, we've had some amazing guests, Brian Scudamore from 1-800-GOT-JUNK, Charlie Mullins from Pimlico Plumbers out in London, Vincent Wong from M Help Desk, Tom Shane from The Shane Company. I mean, just amazing people that have built incredible businesses. And I think it's good to hear those stories along with the struggles and the crap that, you know, Johnny and I just shared today, because that's what we go through. If you don't ever hear the encouragement stuff, I think then you can get lost and you can get discouraged. But if you don't ever hear the stuff that, you know, is going bad in somebody else's business, sometimes you feel like, God, I'm just a freaking loser. Like, why can't I get this thing right? And so many people that I think I've talked to over the years that are super successful, they're only successful because they're kind of standing on this pile of crap that from things that they've learned from and things that they've done the wrong way, and then they've done some things that are right. And it's just like, you know, John, you were talking about with your race. It's like, we can give up and we can quit, or we can push forward, get some food, you know, get some encouragement from some other people, and then press on. And then we finish that race and it's like, holy shit, look what I just did.
Felt good. Yep.
You know, so check out our website, connect with us through iTunes and Stitcher if you haven't connected with us through there. And then don't forget, we've got some folks that help make this show possible. VA staffer, who's helping me put my new website up, John.
Well, VA staffer is going to get a call from me here very soon because I'm going to have them work on my other new website.
Well, I think we actually may have Jay come on our next What's Up episode and talk a little bit about building websites
good.
SEO. Does that sound like a good thing?
Yep, I would like that.
I know he's definitely excited to do it with us. So we'll have Jay from VA Staffer. So go check out vastaffer.com. And then, of course, M Help Desk. If you've got a service-based business, the folks over at M Help Desk do a fantastic job. It's a system that is it's pretty user-friendly, so it's easy to learn. They have tons of tutorials and stuff. But what it does for you is it puts all of your business stuff, all of your contacts, all of your invoicing, all of that office kind of stuff in one place and makes it bearable. So go check out mhelpdesk.com and let them know that you heard about us. Right? You heard about them through us.
All right.
Anyways, thanks for joining us this week on Small Business Naked. I'm Nick.
And I'm Johnny Battle. See ya.
You've been listening to Small Business Naked with Nick and Johnny. For more episodes and more information, go to smallbusinessnaked.com.
I thought we'd talk about all the shit that's going on in our lives. How we're both ready to just throw it in and just walk away from everything.
The challenges of running a business.
Yeah.
All right, let's go with that.
All right, that sounds good.
Give us plenty of content. You're going to have to time us to shut us down on that one.
Yeah, I know. We'll go long and maybe I'll just cut stuff out.